ओम ज्ञानतिम निरंजशा जनंजना शलाकया चक्षु मिलिताम येना तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। So how many of you were here when I gave the other talk a couple of days ago? Most of you. All right. So I won't repeat that so much. And yesterday Dhanavir Maharaj spoke. Most of you were here for that. He told me that what he did was mostly he asked if you had questions. So you all asked your questions and he gave the answers. So what is left? How many of you have read the book by Bhakti Vikesh Swami called Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness? Most, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 35% of you. All right. Well, even if you've read it, you probably wouldn't mind us looking at it. We could make this sound a little bit lower because it's a little bit too reverberating. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Rama Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. I owe a debt of gratitude to Bhakti Vikash Swami because this morning I was giving the Srimad Bhagavatam class Prabhupada was giving, I was trying to represent, and at least for some part of the class I drew from his book on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and now I'm going to draw very heavily on the Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness book. I was just told this morning, so you'll have to excuse me that I don't have such a structured presentation. Basically what I was planning on doing is just looking at the book. It's got quite an extensive table of contents. We could pick out a few topics. Well, maybe what I could do, I can read the table of contents and then I can ask you to choose which topic or topics that you'd like us to look at and focus a little bit. I don't want to just... It's not so stimulating, you might say, if we're here together and I only just read from the book, or we can read a little bit from it. But also, there may be some question or a little more detail from some aspects of it. I don't have a paper copy, so you have to excuse. There's nothing wrong nowadays with computers. Politically correct to use computer. First, I just before reading the table of contents, there's a preface to the first edition, preface to the second edition. Maharaj reports that the book was very widely distributed and it was translated into, it's been reprinted 3 times in English, maybe more times since then. I don't know the date of this second edition. And also in Russian, Croatian, Mandarin, which is Chinese, Italian, Indonesian, Portuguese, and about 10,000 books in print, which is pretty good for a book of this nature. It's not something that just for everybody. And he says, although there are not 10,000 brahmacharis in our movement, devotees from all ashrams have expressed appreciation of this book, and it continues to be in demand. But in the second edition, he's added some more details, some more examples, a little more information. So, but the second edition is similar to the first edition. So I'll read a little from his introduction. And this, you know, he's... Some devotees do not agree with what he says. I personally agree. He wrote, his latest book is called Speaking Strongly in Krishna Consciousness. He even says here in the introduction, I'll read in a couple of moments, describing his own style. Personally, I don't think he's at all fanatical. He's just being practical. Because as he points out, we're dealing with quite a, a heavy issue. You know, it's to control the senses is not a small thing, especially in Kali Yuga. Even in India, who is really getting the proper training? What to speak in the West? And then we come to Krishna consciousness, and we're supposed to control the senses. And of course, out of all the senses, we say the tongue is the most difficult to control. But at the same time, from a practical point of view, because we have studied out of Vijayajaja, Tantriyajateka, and all that, you've given us this nice prasadam, spiritual food, just to help us control the tongue. You don't find too many devotees that are having that much trouble, you know, avoiding meat eating. Of course, controlling the tongue is also there. You know, to take Krishna prasadam, we still have to control ourselves. Maybe at the beginning you eat up to the neck, and that's all right, but then soon realize that I'm not going to be able to survive spiritually or materially if I just, you know, just keep eating up to the neck. So we have to control ourselves. So what they say in French, don't touch the lips and hands. In French, there's two words, gourmet and gourmand. So gourmet, sometimes we think gourmet means someone is just a sense gratification, but technically it means one who eats to live. And gourmand is one who lives to eat. So gourmand, we would say Godas, and gourmet would be Goswami in that sense. But even though, okay, so prasadam also requires a certain restraint, but when it comes to this issue called sex, that's such a heavy thing. This is, as we were I mentioned, you know, as the other day, that Jayadvaita Swami, he called the opposite sex walking, talking Maya. Sometimes men, they say, oh, Maya Devi, something like that. So to control that is not such a... See, this is Vedic culture. This is Vedic culture. So Matajis, they hear... Maybe it's a coincidence, maybe they don't understand English, but somehow just at this point they very shyly got up and walked out. So this is Vedic culture. Why should... of course, Maharaj, he mentions that... first he says the book is... for men, I'll read a little from the introduction in just a moment. But then he invites those of other ashrams can also benefit, and indeed they because you know, there's more books going out of this than there are brahmacharis in ISKCON, so there's probably other ashram members are also appreciating. And he even says ladies can also read to find out more why they should be very careful with their dealings with men. Sometimes it says it takes two to tango. Tango is a type of dance. It takes two to tango. So, but sometimes, so you might say it takes some cooperation on both sides. But we can't depend on the mercy of others. We ourselves have to, in that sense, we ourselves have to, be what we say in modern English, we say proactive. It means we have to take the initiative to... it's like, for instance, when you're driving a car, sometimes they talk about defensive driving. In other words, defensive driving means that you always are ready, you're prepared for the other driver that may be a few feet away from you to make some wrong move, dangerous move, maybe cut you off all of a sudden, maybe he won't see you. So defensive driving means that you're anticipating what the other one. That's why you don't want to drive too fast, because then you don't have time to make, to counteract mistakes on the part of others. So in other words, we have to, as we navigate in Krishna consciousness, we have to be prepared. Not that I just relax and, you know, they're all my mother and I'll always be protective. You never know. At any given moment, especially for you younger men, some lady could just be very aggressive. So defensive means that you're prepared how to deal with that, or maybe I should say how not to deal with that. So this is part of the idea. Anyway, he begins, Bhakti Vikarswami begins his introduction. He says, human life, especially the male form, is meant for self-realization. There's one purport where Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam that the male form is meant for self-realization, and the female form is the enchanting principle. Of course, it's true. We know, okay, it works both ways. That male, you know, man is Maya for a woman, woman is Maya for a man. That's there. But it doesn't mean that it's completely, exactly, works exactly the same way. It is actually, I mean, the main thing is the great good fortune of getting the rare human form of life. Like we're hearing about in Bhagavatam, we're hearing about King Puranjana. So he's thinking at the time of death of his wife. So what happens? Of course he gets the body of a woman. But in that body of a woman, now she, Vaidarbhi, is doing very nicely in that body. She's acting her Sri Dharma very, very well. She's following her husband very, very nicely. He leaves, she goes with him. She's very chaste and austere and taking vanaprastha. Soon we'll read how, very soon, that he leaves his body. And how she, so, it's not that it's not auspicious to have a human body even in a woman's body, but comparatively speaking, men are especially fortunate because they have the male form, which is a lot less complicated in many ways, and there's more freedom to remain less entangled. The woman's body is so much of the body is just about reproduction. It's just about, you know, bearing children, you know, receiving and then bearing children and then feeding the children. I mean, you know, and at the same time, the whole body is also simultaneously arranged in such a way that it really excites the opposite sex to serve that. So male body, that's also there, that women could become attracted and all that, but it's not the same. Even modern psychologists, they will admit that visually the male becomes much more easily attracted just by seeing, you know, like that, than the lady. So human life, especially the male form, is meant for self-realization, to understand our eternal relationship with God, Krishna. This book is meant for men who have seriously taken to Krishna consciousness, and especially for those devotees who have joined the Brahmachari ashram with no training or background in spiritual life. He mentions later in the introduction that some Brahmacharis, they're Brahmacharis still, but they prefer to wear white. For different reasons. Sometimes it may be institutional. I think in India, you may be practicing celibacy, But if you're not living in the Brahmachari ashram, then you wear white. Is there anybody here in that category? No? Well, this in the yacha, but right here in this room, I guess not. But there are many like that. We're chanting japa, we see so many men, they're actually brahmacharis, but they're wearing white because they just don't happen to be living in the ashram. Or they may not even, we may not even see them, but they're wearing white. Brahmachari means, quote, the life of celibacy. Unfortunately, the very concept of such a lifestyle is still incomprehensible to the vast majority of human society. He points out that if a person is a little open-minded and a little intelligent, we could preach to them. Tell them about God. Tell them about human life and the importance of connecting with God and serving God. And even something about regulating the senses. But as soon as you start telling them, especially in the Western countries, you start telling them about celibacy, many people just can't relate to it at all. They think it's automatically very strange, you know. Even practically speaking, when we go out on Harinam Sankirtan in the West, even the sannyasis will recommend have some grihasthas, have some ladies, couples present, so people won't think we're strange, weird, celibate monks that, you know, in the West they, in India there's some accommodation for that still because of tradition. But in the West, and it's a big, pretty big part of the world, they don't relate to it. They think it's unnatural, strange. And it says, this book will definitely not be understandable to or appreciated by, nor is it meant for the common man. Now, it could be the common man in a different yuga could really relate to this book and would probably already be practicing most of what's described. But the common man in Kali Yuga, especially when you go out of India, but even also within India, the book's not, just a plain common man without any training, without any, hasn't read Prabhupada's books, hasn't become inspired, they can't relate to it. And even we see a stubborn holding on, even those who may have even been initiated, it's still hard to deal with this raw fact that we have to give up sense gratification. I just can't, when I say give up sense gratification, obviously I mean material sense gratification. And spiritual sense gratification, like taking prasadam with moderation. So, still there are many constituencies, we can say, in the Krishna consciousness movement that you can see they have difficulty with it. So they may, for instance, reject that we should follow Vedic culture, better Western culture, because there's more scope for sense gratification. Now, I'm not saying that that's their plan or anything like that, but subconsciously, I'm not accusing them, but you can detect that they may have some agenda like that. I don't know if I mentioned last time, but becoming a devotee means making this fundamental change in our life. We can call it a fundamental paradigm shift from sense gratification to self-realization. If at the end of the day, as we say, the bottom line or the conclusion is that my shelter, what I really feel will protect me, is that I can, you know, every day, every week, I can enjoy my senses in different ways, maybe more subtly, maybe more grossly, maybe licitly, maybe illicitly. But if at the end of the day my feeling is that my shelter is sense gratification, that's the wrong paradigm for going back to home, back to Godhead. But even though I may still be somewhat attached to sense gratification, I may be having, you know, still some struggle. I think we all are. We may be on different levels. Some of you may be much better Goswamis than I am. But the point is that if our heart was seeing, this is not my shelter. We've read Bhagavad Gita. We know that the contact of the senses and their objects are the causes of misery. Yahi samsparsha jashboga dukha yonya evate adhyanta banta kuntaya nateshu ramate buddha. That wise men do not delight in such things. Why? Because adhyanta banta kuntaya has a beginning and an end. And that also, if I do it, it'll always result in misery. We were saying last time about that. Beginning, it's just like nectar, and then it becomes poison. Happiness, so-called happiness in the mode of passion. Vishayendriya samyogat, the samyogat, the union between the senses and the sense objects. That's not going to produce. Sooner or later, very often sooner, it produces misery. And it also says in 14th chapter that vajrasrastu phalam dukam, that the phala, or the fruit of activity in the mode of passion, is dukkha. Is the same thing, misery. So, if we really have taken that to heart, in myself, the first seed was planted in 1966, when Srila Prabhupada quoted, Ahara Nidya Bhayamaitunam Chan. I didn't know Sanskrit, I didn't know what was going on, so, but then when he said in English, even the English was hard to understand because of Prabhupada's accent, but this came through. There's a difference between human life and animal life. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, that's the same. But there's something special about human life. What is it? Dharmohi teisham adiko visesho dameinahina pashupir samana. That the difference is dharma. It's religion. Spiritual life. Vaman atato brahma jigya. In other words, that planted a seed. That really entered. It's not that immediately I became brahmachari or something like that, but these things inspire. Now, if we've been inspired like this from reading Prabhupada's books, from hearing his lectures, from hearing from his representatives, his disciples in the Sri Guru Parampara, then even though I may still, we're hearing that verse, Bhajyamano Imad Bhakto, what is that? Vishayad, Ajitendriya, that we're still not completely Jitendriya. We're still Ajitendriya. There's still some lack of sense control. We may sometimes be disturbed by our senses not being able to control them properly. But still, if we're moving forward, if we're still fixed, that the goal is Krishna, Brahman, Parabrahman, Krishna, then we're properly engaging ourselves in trying to push ourselves to complete this conversion. It's not a question of, oh, I used to be a Christian and now I'm becoming a Hindu, Hare Krishna, something like that. It's nothing like that. The conversion is, before I thought my shelter was sense gratification. Now I know that that will not save me. Neither sense gratification nor the expansion of all that. Dehapatra kalatra dish. Atma sanyaishva satsvapi tesham brahmato nitanam pasyan, what is it? Pasyan api na pasyati. Pasyan api, even though they see that it will not save me, but they don't see. There's something called cognition without recognition. In other words, you see it, but you don't recognize what's there right in front of you. What I'm trying to get at is that brahmachari, that makes sense if we're actually serious about making this fundamental transition. Bhagavad Gita 269, it's like the difference between night and day. What is night of all beings is a time of awakening for self-control. The time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. This is such deep language. And it gives us a very clear idea how we have to make a much more fundamental conversion or transition. It's not just a question of changing, you know, from one religion to another or something like that. To really, really become a seeker, a hankering to really become anxious to get Krishna, then this has to go on. So he says, in Krishna consciousness, we stand apart from the general masses. Now, I'm spending all this time, I'm just hardly getting into the introduction. I said at the beginning that I would read the table of contents. So should I just, because it's only a half hour left, so should I just move ahead to the table of contents and then we can do that part, or do you want me to continue what I'm doing, or it doesn't matter? All right, I'll just make you speak another 5 minutes, like in this style, and then we'll go to the table of contents, and then we'll see if there's anything that provokes. You had, a lot of opportunity to ask questions to a very senior sannyas who's much more experienced. I'm just practically a newborn sannyasi, and he's been so many years. And I remember he was really one of the few ISKCON devotees we had, especially back at that time. Let's see, it must have been 1990. I remember seeing him in San Diego, and he was a vanaprastha. And he was actually, I'm not saying he went out to the woods only, but he was actually taking the whole thing very seriously, making a transition. So, our goal is Krishna, and we are prepared to do whatever is necessary to attain to him. That's the idea. In other words, I want to be sheltered. We're all looking for shelter. But I know my shelter is Krishna. My shelter is spirit. My shelter is not this sense gratification. It may be a shelter for the animals, because that's all they could know. Ultimately, they find out that, but they're animals, so it's okay. But for human, then it's a great disaster. What does it say in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, text 7? That verse, karpanya doho patas pabhava shamitvandana, that Krishna, shishasti ham sanit, now I'm your disciple, a soul surrender unto you. What does Prabhupada say? That this whole material world is nothing more than a whole system of perplexities. It's just full of perplexities and problems and difficulties. And then Prabhupada quotes two verses. The first one, they're very, very similar, but this will deal with one of them. Yavad etad gar gavatit vashma lokat praiti sakripana. It's from the, I think, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. He says that it is first states that one who quits his body without understanding the science of self-realization, it means he's quitting his body like the cats and dogs. One who does not solve the problems of life as a human being, and he leaves the body without understanding the science of self-realization, then his death is like the death of the cats and dogs. In one sense, it's worse, because then in human life you can go down. Animals generally go up. So our goal is Krishna, and we are prepared to do whatever is necessary to attain to him. Why should we go down into the stool pit of material enjoyment? You can see this book is not for everybody. Brahmacharya is that training whereby, developing knowledge and detachment, vairagya vidya, one becomes immune from the pushing of the senses. Enjoying life in Krishna consciousness and renunciation, one prepares himself to enter the kingdom of God. You know, you can get into a whole discussion, like we won't, but just for thinking about after, is what is this we hear, pravritti marg and nivritti marg? You see? Now, how does that apply? Maybe you would know from your studies of Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami. Does he ever use those terms, pravritti marg? Not so much. Pravritti marg means the path of sense enjoyment. And nivritti marg means the path of renunciation. But there's some scope for pravritti marg within Krishna consciousness. I mean, there is the grihastha ashram and all that. But basically, this movement of Krishna consciousness is actually a movement of austerity. It is actually a movement of renunciation. You won't get that preaching when you first come. You're not going to say, oh, welcome, this is a movement of austerity. You have to give up sense gratification. But you'll see it. You'll find out. Hopefully by the time you find out, you'll have enough philosophical basis that you won't run away when you hear that. I mean, Srila Prabhupada, he got the devotees initiated. He captured. And then he put on the wall, and no illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, put the rules. Of course, I think at initiation they also had knew that even at the beginning. You read the purport to this song by, what is it, Narottam Das Guru or Lochan Das Thakur? Saying you just take the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, it's like thousands of moons. And he's saying it's so easy. I may be mixing two songs, but there's a purport, either that or Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dvayakaramoy. He says it's so easy. Don't think that you will not become blissful by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. But then he says there's only one little thing, one little condition. What is that? You have to give up sense gratification. So it's not like a secret. It's there. You'll find it. So then he goes on and he acknowledges that, you know, there's two kinds of brahmachari. We say naishtika brahmachari, but maybe not like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was naishtika brahmachari. But that's very, very high level and standard. We also can use the term naishtika brahmachari, that even if you weren't pukka your whole life, but still you're determined never to marry. Even if you haven't taken a formal vow like a sannyasi takes, but still, you naishtika brahmachari. And then there's, I don't know the other term, but the brahmachari who remain for some years and is pretty much resigned at a certain point. He will take the grihastha life. One of the reasons that it's good for grihasthas to read this book also is because they have to prepare for vanaprastha, which is also celibate and very renounced. Vanaprastha life is quite austere, even not following as extreme measures as you read about in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam. It says, Grihastha men may also derive strength from this book in preparation for the renunciation that they must ultimately accept as vanaprasthas if they actually intend to perfect their lives. I'll just read one more couple of sentences and we'll go right into the table of contents to see if it provokes any further question. In this book, Bhakti Vikar Swami is writing, I have avoided the complex discussion of Varnashram Dharma, which is now a focus of attention and concern for the intellectuals of our society. I have simply tried to present practical advice that brahmacharis may apply in their lives. No doubt some will dismiss it as fanaticism. But without one-pointed determination, has anyone ever achieved anything great? To conquer sex desire is no small achievement. Indeed, is the greatest accomplishment attainable in the material world. It's pretty encouraging that actually, I mean, I'm sure many of you have, if not totally conquered, but greatly subdued your sex desire. Some of you may still be more in the beginning stages of doing that. But it is encouraging that it is considered in the material world, not only in the West, but in general in the material world. It's actually a great accomplishment. You know the famous story, here I go on and on, I'm sorry, that Prabhupada would tell about, they asked, the king asked the minister, so when does one lose attachment to sex desire? When does that stop? So the minister told the king, he said, up until the time of death, it goes on. So the king said, really? And the minister said, just in a few days I'll show you something, so you'll see. So a few days later, he asked the king, come with me, I have to take you, show you something. And the king was submissive because he respected the intelligence of this minister. He said, when you come, bring your daughter. The daughter was like really Madhirekshana, like we were hearing this morning, enchanting eyes and enchanting everything, you know. So young princess, very beautiful. So bring your young daughter, bring her also. The king said, okay, let's see what's going to happen. So they go to the place where a man is dying. And the king walks in, but the man, instead of looking at the king, he immediately, his eyes just fixed on the beautiful daughter. And here was a man just about to die. And the king took note of this, and he said, ah, yes, it is true. There's something in the West, it's a vulgar expression, but forgive me for using it. There's something in the West, they call a man like that, they call him a dirty old man. They say a dirty old man. A dirty old man, he may be 60, 70, 80 years old, and he's still lusting over young women. I mean, Prabhupada would talk, he says these old men, they go to clubs, they pay so much money just to see some naked lady or something like that. So it's pretty degrading. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that it is a challenge, and it does take some decision. It doesn't happen automatically. Yes, growing old helps a little bit, but don't think that that's enough. That I'll just relax, and when I get nice and old, like Damodar Swami, then automatically that will go away. No, you have to. That's why Brahmacharya is such nice ashram, because at least by the time you get old. I mean, look at Ajamil. He was 88 years old. Was he free from sex? No, forget it. So, indeed, it says a wishy-washy, that means a half-hearted or a very weak attempt, will only lead to frustration. Without being fully dedicated, no one will be successful. You know that verse in Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. How does it begin? The one about a pretender. When is a pretender? You know that. How does it start? I always forget the first line. First word? Karmendriyani samyamya yasti manasakspanam indriyatan vimudatma mityachara suchara. He's mitya. Mitya means mitya, not mitta, but mitya. It means he's lying to himself. If one is, that would be like a half-hearted attempt. We are restraining the objects from the senses, like that. And we're allowing our minds to meditate on those sense objects. That just leads to frustration. That creates neurosis, mental problem. And it's not helpful. So one has to be a little bit, not fanatic, but serious. One has to be serious and take the process seriously and not allow oneself. And there is a section in this book about, you know, dealings with women and all that. And he confirms the point I was making a couple of days ago. The secret of success is don't look. Don't look. Don't dwell, you know, something. India, not as frequently. In the West, forget it. I was telling, I won't repeat. I already gave so vivid examples last time. Okay, so in the table of contents, I think that's the other way up. Let's go a little faster. Here it is. Actually, you know how many chapters? There are 50 chapters. I don't even have time to read all the different subjects. But they include such things as the meaning of Brahmacharya. We touched on that last time. I think you understand. the benefits of brahmacharya. I think we touched on that. Also a caveat, that means like a limitation, that brahmacharya is also a designation. Then adiras, that's Ravindra Sarup Prabhu wrote a wonderful essay about that. That's the original desire, this conjugal or sex desire, something about sex he's describing. Mundane sex desires, sex the cause of unlimited suffering, sex fascination, the disease of the modern age. If I read a certain section and you want me to stop and we discuss that, I can open that part and we can look at it for a couple of minutes. Actually, we only have 15 more minutes. I'm sorry, I didn't follow the format I was proposing. It's a very impromptu. Sense gratification. Oh, let's open that chapter. No, Hare Krishna. Restricting association with women. Attitudes in devotional service. Training. Why so many rules and regulations? Guru-disciple relationship. Detachment, austerity, and renunciation. Discipline, determination, higher taste. Association, simplicity, sadhana, regulation, engagement, preaching, traveling, health, retention of semen, the appearance and dress of a brahmachari, nakedness, the general behavior and disposition of a brahmachari, brahmacharya as student life, the brahmachari ashram, residence, personal relationship, the brahmachari leader, attitudes towards grihastha men, dealings with women devotees, dealings with non-devotee women, dealings with children, dealings with friends and family. Well, bad. I mean, it's very relative. I mean, it's if we're going to have a designation, if I say it's much less bad, in other words, it's much more benign for, say, I think, say a few weeks ago, I would say, I'm a brahmachari. That might not be the final Siddhanta, because Lord Chaitanya said, naham vipra na chanara patin, you know, I'm not any of these ashrams or varnas, but it's better that than saying I'm a hippie from Brooklyn, New York. I know one devotee, very prominent devotee, very famous, but you may not know him so well. And he says, I'm a man of the 60s. And he goes sometimes in the Holy Dham wearing very amazing colorful pants with big stripes and circles, and it looks like a wizard or something, and you know, he still is in the hippie. So if we're going to have a designation, with all due respect, if we're going to have a designation, this is the approved designations. They're good, like stepping stones. They're good. It's like you're climbing a mountain. You know how they climb mountains, they hammer a wedge into, and then they step on that. Now that's just a temporary crutch. That's just a stepping stone for to go higher. It's not the top of the mountain. Top of the mountain is no more of these wedges. Is that then you've reached the ultimate as far as mountain climbing. So this is a very good, platform, very good support for reaching the final goal. But let's take a look at it real quickly. Just take a little glimpse. Glimpse means a quick look. Where did it say that? Brahmacharyashram, I think it's a little bit further up. Restricting attitude wise to that determination. Yeah, that was one of the first ones. Meaning, okay, it's chapter 3. And it starts off with that quote of Lord Chaitanya that I just mentioned. I'm not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra. I'm not a brahmachari, grihastha. I'm only a servant of Krishna. That's the point. And then we have to be free from all this. And so it says, brahmacharya is also a designation. He's quoting from Bhagavatam. So what's the adjustment? He said, still in our present position, brahmacharya must be emphasized as an essential part of the means to our end of attaining love of Krishna. It's not the final goal, but it's a means to the goal. In our present neophyte position, unless we make a rigid program to control our senses, there will never be any possibility of advancement to higher levels. But to speak of brahmachari, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction that we have to become Goswami, at least in the sense, literal sense, that we have to be able to control our senses. In another place, Prabhupada writes, a yogi means one who could control his senses according to his plan. I think most of us have to humbly admit that we have a long way to go, but this is the call to action. So we don't want to become overly concerned with externals, but at the same time, remember that this morning we were having a discussion with some devotees after the Bhagavatam class, and we were talking a little about Vedic culture, and he was saying, no, prema, that's the thing. It's nothing to do with this, you know, how you dress and all these are external things. It's prema is, that's what we want, is prema, bhakti. But how do we get there? How could I have love for Krishna if I'm giving my love to stool and urine and things like that? You know, is that very nice for the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he has to stand in line and wait until I finish relishing these horrible things and then whatever's left over, I love him? I mean, I'm speaking strongly, but the point is that God is not small time. You know, he's just by his breathing, and that's only an expansion of him. All the universes are coming back. I mean, we're not dealing with a small timer. And yet at the same time, he's a person, and he would love to exchange with us in loving, eternal, loving relationship. But we can't do it half-hearted. We can't do it like, okay, a little bit of, yeah, I think Krishna's cute. Or something like that. Yeah, I like Krishna, you know. So is anyone else? Yes, Prabhu. Well, I think Prabhupada would like to see books distributed to everyone, and especially in the earlier days, if you prohibited the brahmacharis from distributing books to Matajis, then a lot less books would have gone out, because probably at least half the people that buy the books happen to be ladies. So we wouldn't want to stop the book distribution like that. Of course, now you can say, okay, there aren't as many brahmacharis. It's not so much, it's again, it's the preparation, it's the mood, the intention. Sometimes Krishna helps, and I was on book distribution in 1975, 76, and for one moment, my mind was very, very attracted to part of the body of a lady I was distributing a book to, and in 2 seconds, a policeman came and grabbed me and took me and put me in the police car. And so you see, Krishna is so kind, you know. But sometimes we're not so lucky that we get controlled like that. It actually happened. So, you know, if it's too much to handle, if the ladies are going around, as I was saying, half naked and all that, and it's just too much, then not in the name of distributing a book that I allow myself to become contaminated like that. But at the same time, we don't want to go the other way. That in the name of to protect my purity, that I won't be merciful. You know, after all, you know, you give a lady a book, she'll show it to her boyfriend, maybe. Or, you know, if she's a little pious, she might appreciate it, and or she may have children, and, you know, so... or she may share it with other ladies. They're also humans. We're not denying that. We're not denying. So does anyone... I mean, there's so much contents in the book, it's 50 subjects. Anyone have any other? Yes. You mean generally we consider how much I'm controlling my senses by comparing what I'm doing with what others are doing, and like relative? Well, the standard is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Kamasya nendriya pratiya labo jivetti yavataha. Jignashur, what is it? Jignasha. Tato neha karma bi. Tato yat neha karma bi. That the standard is that sense gratification should never be the goal of life, as we were saying about that paradigm shift. Rather, human life is meant for inquiry into Brahman. That should be the goal of all works. But one should satisfy the senses sufficiently for healthy life. Now, when we say healthy life, it doesn't mean become a health fanatic either. You know, that, okay, why aren't you in the morning program? No. And I was in one temple, and they had supposedly a bhakta program. And I asked the bhakta, I said, why aren't you coming to the morning program? I never heard of a bhakta program where bhaktas don't come to Mangalarti. And they said, I have to go to gymnasium to do my exercise in the morning. And he said, well, how many times you go to the gym? He said, I go 3 times a week. And even the other days I didn't see them coming. So, in other words, healthy, you know, ultimately we have to leave these bodies, but, you know, we're not the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan, so we can take... Actually, sometimes it's quite compatible. This idea of healthy life also helps sense control. Remember what I said about eat to live, don't live to eat. So it's not like a contradiction. Controlling the sense. But then when you get into really strong renunciation, then it depends on your realization. Gauri Kishore Das Babaji, if his stomach was growling for hunger, he'd take some dirt and throw it in the stomach and say, you shut up, your stomach. And go on in his bhajan, in his transcendental devotional service, manasa seva, whatever. But it is said, I hope it's not offensive, but it is said historically that if you actually eat dirt, you'll go blind. And he went blind. But that didn't bother him either. Now, if I was imitating and I was eating dirt to make my stomach be quiet, and then, I mean, I'm almost half blind, but just yesterday I was going to get glasses, and monkeys, I have to be careful they don't steal my glasses. I mean, I'm very concerned that I can see. But if I was so elevated that I go blind and say, oh, that's okay, at least I can hear, I'm not in that level. So we have to be realistic. Prabhupada said, ultimately, we should make eating and sleeping and everything nil, down to zero. But at the same time, we don't imitate, who is it, Raghunath Das, who is eating the buttermilk every 3 days? Is that Raghunath Das, Prabhupada? We can't imitate that. So what is the balance? Well, I'll give an example, very practical example. Prabhupada said, failure is the pillar of success. So I have a big, big pillar to become successful on. When I was told that my authority in ISKCON told me he wanted me to take sannyas in 1986, imagine. So many years ago. 1986, I was just 40 years old. So, and he wanted me to initiate disciples. I mean, you know, I was not ready to do that. For what I did was I started taking vows to control my senses. The first vow I took, if I don't wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I will not take any prasad till 3 in the afternoon. Jai! Vijama, Vijama. Well, I said, tell the demigods, hold your flowers. Don't throw them yet. Let's see what happens after 2 months. So for a few days I was, I write in my diary book. I said, yes, now I've taken this vow. I'd offer obeisances to Prabhupada. It's so offensive because I'm promising Prabhupada that I'm going to do this. And okay, for a few days I can do it. But of course I would get to, I can't do, you see. So we can't artificially. Actually, Satsrup Maharaj is so encouraging. I told him, I'm going to eat much less. And he said, very good. We're all waiting for someone to become advanced. Yes, go for it. He's always been so encouraging. But did I really eat much less than... I was the Javita Prabhu. You know Javita, the editor of the English BBT? A great devotee. People sometimes confuse him with me and me with him because we look a little the same. Yeah, he's a million times more fixed in chanting and like that. The only reason he's not sannyas is because his service is sitting at the computer and doing the BBT work. So Javita Prabhu, I used to go to the restaurant with him in 55th Street, Prabhupada's skyscraper building in New York. This was the last year, 1980. And I also made a vow at that time. It was a little easier. We would give these coupons and we can have quite a nice feast every day in Govinda's restaurant. A big restaurant, so much variety. Oh, a wonderful thing. But I would have one day, I would hardly eat. Just a little salad and a little soup. In the morning, I would just take one cup of juice. And then the next day I'd eat more fully. And Javita would say, Prabhupada, is this your on day or your off day? Or something like that. Now, I'm not trying to make fun of myself. I mean, it's a noble effort, do it. Maybe at that time I didn't make a formal vow, which is better. Just trying. So we could try to make some program. And in that sense, getting old does help. You get older, you find you have no choice. You have to start restricting your eating, or you just can't. You can't digest like you did when you were young. Anyway, that's the whole subject. I think the devotee who asked the question is already getting a little bored of the answer. It's such a long answer. All right, maybe it's already... it's just now time to end, but maybe we could sneak in one more question if one last person is curious. You had a lot of nice questions yesterday with Dhanavir Swami. He told me he let you ask lots of questions. So you already know everything. I should hear from you what he said. Did anybody record that class? Does someone have a recording of it? All right. Well, maybe you can give me a pen drive or I'd like to hear that. All right. I hope that this was a kind of thrown together thing, but I hope it's all right. And is this the last session of the Brahmachari classes? Or three more still? All right. If they call upon me for another one, I'm just going to say I did the best I could. So I think you've heard enough of what I have to share with you. I hope that this session was suitable for you and that it was something gained. His divine... Oh, last question, yes. Well, I'm not an Ayurvedic expert in that. You'd have to ask someone else that kind of question. Obviously, we all know that there's certain types of prasadam which would be more agitating and, you don't want to eat so much at night and all that kind of thing. We know the basic guidelines. The general principle is if I could control what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about during the day, then I'll sleep better. That's a whole subject. Okay, thank you all so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tagore Premanand.